Hello everybody at Blind Cool Tech. I am Riz. I hope you are all doing okay. And I'm going to continue my discussion about HTML and I'm going to extend on a few points. Now, I do need to stress that there are some advanced things I'm going to talk about in this podcast. Sorry about that. My words were all going off somewhere, don't know where. Anyways, there are some parts that are going to be a little bit complex for me, even, and it will mean me transcribing or passing on to you some text directly. Now, that's going to be a little bit tricky, so if you've got something to take notes down on, then that might be a good idea because it's a bit that's very fiddly and complicated that's coming up. I'm also going to talk to you about forms and how to post them using your own email address. I'm going to talk about XHTML, and that's where the complicated bit comes in. And I'm also going to talk to you about relative and absolute links, and just to cover a few points that I missed last time that you may find interesting. Just to wrap and continue things further. First of all, I'd like to say thank you to all those who enjoyed the last HTML Basics podcast. I hope this one is as useful as the last one was, for all my fumbling errors and things. I bet you there'll be more in this one. So, time to get started. The first thing I'm going to talk about is links. Now, I forgot to cover this, and I do apologize about this. I did forget to cover this on the last discussion I had with you about HTML. Absolute and relative links. Now, an absolute link, when you create a link by using the A tag with the href attribute, when you use an absolute, you give the full URL, which is a uniform resource locator. So, for instance, if we were going to talk about Blind Cool Tech, it would be something like less than A H R E F equals quote HTTP colon slash slash www dot blindcooltech.com slash quote and greater than. Now that's an example of an absolute reference because the reason why that's absolute is because it gives the exact address. Now let's say for instance you've got your own website and you've got some directories, you've got a directory structure or folders as they call them now. The way to make this simpler, because you want to be able to mess around with your websites and test the links when you're using your computer and even when it's not uploaded to the internet, so you want to be able to do that. And instead of giving the full absolute address, which wouldn't work if you were offline, of course, it wouldn't work. If you use relative links, that does work. Now, a relative link works simply by just giving the file name. Now, this is where the directory part comes important. And of course, relative links are only used to point to links on your own website, not an external website. An external website is one that's beyond your own website. In other words, one that's not in your on the website you're on. It'll take you to a completely different web page. Website, sorry, not web page. So, let me give you an example of how to use a relative file name, a file, sorry, reference. Let's say, for instance, we've got a folder with all our web content, and it's called website. Very imaginative, I know. Inside this, we've got two items. So you hit enter on your web space folder, And you've got two items here. We've got a folder called files, and we've got a document called index.html. Okay? Now, let's say we press enter on index.html. In there are links to the stuff located within the files directory or folder. I apologize. I've been in the world of computing for quite some time back then. We used to call them directories. Now, let's say I want to reference a file within that directory or folder. I'll get there eventually. And let's say, for instance, it's called contact.html. This is how you would do it. You would create your usual link tag. In other words, it would be less than a space href equals quote. Now, this is the important part. You would then type files, as that's the name of the folder, / contact.html. Then you close your quote, and then you do your greater than symbol, then your text for your link, and then less than / a greater than. Now, the important thing to note here is the files / contact.html in the quotation marks of the href attribute. Now, what that tells us is that there is a folder called files, and in that folder called files, there is a file or a document called contact.html. And what that'll do is it'll tell the browser that that's what I want to locate. Okay? And that's what it will do. Now, if the file you want to locate is in the same directory, in the same folder as the one you're in at the moment, you can just leave the folder name out completely. So you could just do contact.html if it was in the same folder as the index.html file. Okay? Now let's say we go into the files folder and we go to this contact.html file. And you press enter on that. Now, that will undoubtedly have a link to the home page, because obviously most pages should have, or all pages should have, a link to your home page so people can get back there. Now, you're asking me, how do I get back there? Because it's not in the files directory, isn't my index.html file. So how do I get there? Simple. This is how you do it. You use, instead of the files / you use .../ index.html in your href attribute. So it would be less than a space href equals quote .... index.html close quotes greater than, then homepage for instance, less than / a greater than. And what that does is it tells the browser to go one directory up from the one you're in. And if you have even more subfolders, then obviously you need more ... ... And the more directories, or the further down you go, the more ... ... you need. Basically, it tells it to go one folder up from the one you're on. So that basically is how to use relative and absolute absolute references to your links. Now, the other thing I need to talk about is something I again omitted to talk about last time on the first HTML podcast, and that's comments. Comments are useful because what they do is they give you, as the creator of the web page, some indication as to why you've done things the way you've done them. And they're a good way of telling other people why you've done things in the way that you have. Now, to do comments is quite simple. What you need to do is a greater than exclamation point dash dash. That will start off your comments. Then what you do is you put in the words you want to put into your comments, and then you need to close off your comments. And you do this by doing dash dash greater than. Okay? So basically, it works like this. Less than exclamation point dash dash commented text dash dash greater than. And anything that that appears in between those strange gatherings of symbols, that will be your text, which is commented out for the browser and will not show up on your web page. It will only show up on your underlying text, in other words, in your source text. Now, don't put any private details or anything in there, like hidden attributes or anything like that in there, because anyone who's viewing the source code can obviously read that. So don't put any private passwords or notes or anything in there that you may think are useful. Just a little tip for you. So that's comments. Now, last time I was talking about forms, and I was talking about how there is a way of being able to publish forms and send them straight to your email address. Now, I will tell you how to do this, and I will also tell you the shortfall to this. It is a simple way of working it, and in that respect, I suppose it's okay, but it does have a shortfall. And this is how it's done. Now, remember, to create a form, we use the form tag. And of course, because it's a container tag containing form elements, we use a close form tag. If you can't remember, refer back to the other HTML basics podcast that I did. Anyways, so this is how it's done, and I'm gonna tell you what I'm gonna spell it out first, and then I'll just describe what we're doing. Less than form space method equals quote post quote space action equals quote MAILTO email address quote space ENCTYPE equals quote TEXT / PLAIN quote greater than. Now, what that is the form tag with various attributes, and those attributes have various properties. It's form method equals post action equals mail to, and then you put in your email address, mail to colon whatever your email address is, and enc type equals text / plain. Now, basically, the method is how you wish to send the form, and it's post and get, I think, but everybody uses post. The action is how you wish to do it, and in this case, it's mail to MAILTO colon and then the email address of your email address, for instance. And then it's enctype equals text slash paint, and that's just the encoding type, and that will send you the name and value pairs of the control. So say for instance, it will send you the name of the text box and the value inside that text box, whatever the person's entered. Now, once you've done this, it will send it to your email address. The important thing to do here is to ensure that you give the names of your form elements meaningful names, so you know what it's talking about. So for instance, for someone, if you wanted to have someone's first name, you just put something like F name or first name or something, and then at least you know what it means. The other thing to note here is if you create a submit button and someone just sends it without filling any of the items in, then you will still get the email with the details of the web of your form, but because nobody's filled anything in, there'll be nothing there. You'll just get the names of your elements, like your text boxes or your checkboxes or your list items, without any data. So in other words, if no one fills anything in at all, you'll still get the form if someone just clicks the submit button. I just thought I'd warn you about that because it can happen. There is a way around this, but it does require JavaScript. And I'm thinking of covering JavaScript, whether I do or not, I'm not entirely sure. It is quite complex. But I may cover JavaScript. So that's basically the basics of sending your form using your own email address. And it is quite a basic, but it does work. And that does give you feedback. Provided the person fills in a form, of course. If they don't, then you'll just get a blank form. Publishing your website. Now, a lot of people have been asking me about how you do this and what's the best way of publishing your website onto the internet once you've actually created it. Now, I've had a look at this, and this is a very vast subject, very vast. And there are a few different methods, and some can be complex and some can be simple. Most of them are quite complex, in fact. So, I mean, really, it's such a vast field, it's a minefield in its own right and does require a lot of research. I will give you some pointers and tips though. What I found quite useful, and a lot of people also use this method, is what they will do is they will use their ISP. Now, everybody's ISP, your internet service provider, gives you a certain amount of web space. All you need to do is either access their help pages on their website or contact your ISP, and you will have a certain amount of web space. And what you do then is use a file transfer program to submit your documents to that website that they give you. And you use your own username and password to access it. And what they do is they give you a certain amount of web space, so like 50 megabytes or something, depending on how generous they feel, I suppose. They'll give you so much space. And then, I mean, it's usually uploads.webspace.whatever the website is. It does vary. However, they do give you the access. Most ISPs do. And then what you do is, once you've posted your information up on there, you can actually register a website, if you can find one. And there are various websites which enable you to register your own domain name. And that way, what it'll do is it'll create a link straight to your web pages, which are hosted by your ISP. Now, hosting is a difficult thing. If you've got an internet server, of course, which very, very, very few people do anyways, It's very difficult, and it can be a lot rather cumbersome, long procedure to have a hosting system up and running. So that's why I've decided not to cover that aspect here, because it is very complex and quite a long procedure. Also, another thing, certain websites do, Angelfire is one I came across, and there's a few others. Yahoo, I think, does one as well, where they give you some web space and you post your stuff up to them, and they'll stick it on there. And I mean, it's not as good as your ISP's one, because what you do is you have loads of their stuff on the top of your website as well, just advertising their own website. But it's another alternative whereby they will give you a certain amount of web space again, and you can put your own files and documents and things like that there. And that's another way of going about it. And that can also work for you. I mean, like I said, different people have different ways, means, and methods. Some people even use their have workspace permission and things like that at their work, at their place of work. Some people do it that way. That's quite rare, though. So those are a couple of ideas of how to get your website hosted. My first suggestion would be to try your ISP. See if you can get any luck there. Most ISPs do, like I say, and when they give you your email address, they also do give you a certain amount of space on your with your account. So it's worth one, it's definitely one worth checking out. Now, the final bit I'm going to talk to you about is XHTML, which is Extended Hypertext Markup Language. Now, this was the part that was going to provide some problems, and having a look at it, there was something I was going to do which I'm not now, and I was going to feed you a whole load of text. And to be honest, it's really not worth it in the end, because you can find this stuff around, copy and paste it. And I'm gonna, and of course, I've got it on my laptop. And what I can do is, like I did last time with the notes that I had with the last podcast, I will add this file to that podcast, and you'll have all the text, and you just copy and paste the lines. As simple as that. Because basically, with XHTML, there's three lines at the top of the page before you even start on your HTML, and they're just cumbersome, long, and become very confusing and do complicate matters a bit, I think. However, to simplify it, I'm not going to read out the whole thing, because it's just a string of characters and a load of nonsense and very confusing. So, either I'll find a place to post these notes, or again, you can contact me and I'll send you the file information again with the like I did last time with the base HTML basics. Basically, I'll describe what XHTML is to you though. XHTML, is the updated version of HTML with standards and protocols that are changed from HTML. Now, HTML, like I was saying last time, is a very loose language, if you can call it a language. I still wouldn't call it a language. It's very loose and open to interpretation. What they've decided to do now is they've decided to change that slightly and add a bit of rigidity and a bit more structure. And that's the important part here, structure. So, what they've done is they've added certain elements, and I will tell you the differences between XHTML and HTML as we know it. Now, basically, the first thing to note is the lines at the top, like I said. Now, what happens here is there's three lines at the top. There's the first line goes on about it goes on about the XHTML version 1.0, and then it says encoding, and you have two encoding types. You have ISO 8190 or something, and you have UTF-8, which are character sets. In other words, people who use things like Roman characters use ISO 87 something or other. And I have got the file with me, but like I said, it's just a lot of characters. The other thing is, sorry about that, hit the microphone with my hand by accident there. The other thing is the doc type, which is HTML. And then there is, what else is there? There's a public, give me a second. Yeah, there's a public address as well. And there's namespacing for XHTML. A lot of nonsense stuff, really. I'd describe it as quite complex. Slightly complicated, I'd say. Not too complicated. But like I said, it's just a lot of characters. Three lines at the top, which I was going to transcribe to you, but I'm not going to now. I think in the benefit of not having you fall asleep whilst I'm talking to you, I probably find it better not doing that. Trust me, you don't want that. So, I will tell you about the general differences. And if you want this file, which you will do if you want to do XHTML, if you want this file, then just contact me and I will post it up there. I'll send it to you. The main difference is, first of all, lowercase is the crucial difference between HTML and XHTML. Everything, every tag name, every tag attribute or value has to be in lowercase. So, you know, your body, your HTML, your title, all your tags have to be in lowercase. Okay? All your attributes have to be in quotation marks. All of them. Everything. Now, before you could get away with naming your radio buttons and then saying checked or leaving the checked out or not checked, I think it was. Now you have to put checked, then equals quote, true quote. Checked equals true, I think it is now. Or you can put checked equals quote checked. Close quotes. In other words, all attributes have to have the quotation marks around them. Sorry, the values, not the attributes, the values. Everything. Now, when I did the last one, I did everything in quotes anyway, so it didn't matter all that much. And it, most things are done that way anyways. So there's a lowercase thing. Then make sure you put your values of your attributes in quotes. Now, standalone tags have changed. Now, you remember me talking to you last time about standalone tags? And I said, for instance, the line break tag. That's less than, br, greater than. That's a standalone tag. Now, the difference between that and the new difference is you need a forward slash. So it's now less than, br, space, forward slash, space, greater than. Now, the space is to stop older browsers from getting confused. Okay? So that's why the forward slash is in two spaces. So it's, for all standalone tags now, you have to have, at the end of the name of the tag, a space, forward slash, space, then a greater than. Just to stop all browsers from moaning and complaining. That's what that's there for. Now, your doc type, which I forgot to cover up above, is either transitional, strict, or frame set. Now, again, I'm not going to tell you too much about this. I'm just going to leave my notes for this podcast to do all the talking because you'll see how complex it is. But with my notes, you'll just be able to do a simple copy and paste job and it'll make the job a whole lot easier. But I will say this much. Your doc type can be either strict. Now, if it's strict, that means you have to use things like, for defining your colors, your fonts, you have to use cascading style sheets, which I haven't covered, by the way, on purpose. Because, to be perfectly frank, cascading style sheets don't mean much to me because, obviously, I can't see the screen. And I don't know how many people on the list could use style sheets. If you want me to do them, of course I will. I don't have a problem with doing them. If anyone does, then let me know. So, if you're using cascading style sheets and you're using strict modern XHTML, then your doc type becomes a strict doc type, DTD doc type. Otherwise, you can use transitional, which I think most people use, because that's the one where you use your original HTML stuff, and transitional works with most websites anyways, and should be no problem at all. I'd advise using transitional for now anyways. And frame set is if you are going to use frames, of course. Those are your doc types. That goes in your top three lines, the ones I was talking about before, where you declare all sorts of rubbish. The other change is image attributes. Now, of course, again, I didn't cover how to do images on the last one. It's just a simple IMG lesson. IMG space src equals quote, then the file name for your image, quote, greater than. Now, your image attribute obviously displays an image. Your image, sorry, tag will display an image. And remember, because it's a standalone tag, it does mean that you have to put in the forward slash. So after you've put in the name for your image, it's space, forward slash, space, greater than. Your image attributes have to have an, your image tags, sorry, have to have an alt attribute, ALT. And that's for alternative text. And that's for folks that use screen readers, like we do. So that is an essential part. I mean, I just thought I'd mention that anyways. All tags must have their closing tags, if they have them. Now that's again something I covered last time when I was talking about lists and how you use the li tag and then the closing li tag. Well, all tags must have their closing tags, and nesting must be correct. So say for instance you wanted to bold italicize something. This is how you would do it. Well, in fact, I'll tell you how you shouldn't do it first. This is how you shouldn't do it. Less than, b greater than, less than, I greater than. This is some bold italicized text. Less than, forward slash b greater than, less than, forward slash I greater than. Now that's wrong. That's wrong because it's not nested correctly. Now, in programming terms, this is quite important. Nesting means that you put, what you do is you put, you close one and then you close the other. In other words, you create a nesting system. So this is the right way to do it. Less than, b greater than, less than, I greater than. This is bold italicized text. Less than, forward slash, I greater than, less than, forward slash, B greater than. That way, what that does is, it nests the italicized, in this case, part together, and puts the bold tags on the outside, creating a nesting structure. And that gives more structure to the tags. Now, in old HTML terms, the way I told you which was wrong, would have worked. And in some browsers, a new way still will work, but it does not comply to XHTML standards. Right, that just about covers everything that I was going to cover in this podcast. I did leave those complex lines at the top of your XHTML documents. Oh, by the way, I need to say one more thing. There's still known as the file extension is still either HTML or HTM. You don't have to, it's not XHTML or anything like that as a file extension. It's still, the file extensions are still the same for XHTML. It's just the, particularly the bit at the top. Now, if you need the file, if you are planning on creating XHTML, then I'll find a place to post it, and or let me know on the BCT email list and I shall send it to you, because I've actually created a document which gives you the three lines at the top. And what that'll do is just copy and paste the top three lines from there into your document. That way it becomes HTML compliant, XHTML, sorry, compliant. Apart from that, the other thing I was going to cover was I am thinking of doing JavaScript for forms. I still might do that. Again, it's a complex area and may be worth doing. I'm not sure yet. No real fundamental decisions have been made on that just yet. But I'd love to hear feedback on this one. And whilst I'm on the subject of feedback, I have to say thank you very much to all of you who did give me feedback. I don't know if I said this before. Thank you very much to all of you who did give me such nice feedback. It's very, very, very much appreciated. Really appreciated that. I hope you all have a really good one. I do hope this was useful to you. And maybe, I don't know if it's going to be possible to post the notes on the BCT website, but I'll find that out. If it is, then maybe it'll be alongside with the file. I don't know. But in any case, if you do want the notes for this, again, just let me know. You can contact the Blind Cool Tech mailing list, and you can also send me a direct email to rizstf@ntlworld.com. That's rizstf@ntlworld.com. Yes. Right. I think that's it. Anything else? Shall I tell you a quick joke or something? No, I better not, in fact. I know, I'll get in trouble if I do that. A lot of people don't like my jokes. Anyways. Nope, I'll go now. Okay, I hope you enjoyed this podcast, and I will hopefully speak to you all very soon. I've got some really good ideas on some more podcasts I want to do. All I've got to do is get hold of a DS2, and once I've got hold of a DS2, I'll be able to do some more podcasts, because I've got some really good ideas coming up, and hopefully do wish to create those podcasts some point soon. Anyways, I'm rambling on here. I apologise. Have a good one, everybody, and I'll speak to you soon. This is Riz, signing off. Bye.